The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found in this Washington Times Community column, Sid and Siegel Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
Welcome to the Bob Siegel Show. This is Kevin Conover filling in for Bob. Bob's on vacation. And I teach Christian apologetics to 11th grade students at Christian High School in El Cajon, and I also have my own Christian apologetics ministry. My website is educateforlife.org, and you can take apologetics classes there online. Apologetics, if you didn't know, is the Greek word for defend, and that's what I do. I help people get answers to their questions about God and Christianity. And if you want to join in on our discussion tonight, you can call 888-344-1170. I have two guests on the show tonight. My first guest is Sandy Hewlett. Sandy is an astronomy professor in the Department of Physics and Astronomy at Saddleback College, and she has over 10 years' experience providing private instruction to students on all kinds of subjects like math, physics, astronomy, chemistry. And tonight we're going to be discussing agnosticism, atheism, theism. Sandy is an agnostic, and she's going to be sharing why she left the Catholic Church and Christianity. And Sandy, I just wanted to welcome you to the show. Are you there?
I'm here.
Great, great. Thanks for coming on the show and joining us in this conversation. Really appreciate it. Some of our audience might not know what an agnostic is, Sandy, and I was wondering if you could just explain what it means to you to be an agnostic.
Well, thanks, Kevin. To me, being an agnostic means you have questions. That a theist is defined as someone who definitely believes in God and subscribes to, you know, one of the many world religions. And an atheist is someone who definitely does not believe in the existence of God and is, you know, very firmly entrenched in the belief that there is no God. And an agnostic is the in-between, the person who is still looking for evidence and is really on the fence looking for proof either way, and is open to various viewpoints, as well as a lot of scientists think that agnosticism is the truly scientific standpoint, since either of the other two viewpoints, theism or atheism, require evidence, and agnosticism is the one where we're still looking for that evidence, where theism and atheism require faith, and agnosticism is the one where we're still looking for the evidence to push us either way.
Great. Okay. Hey, I really appreciate that definition. That's great. We have another guest on the show tonight, and his name is Kerry Waldie. He's a husband, father, pastor, and he's an author of four books. He has a Bachelor of Science from Western Michigan University and is currently enrolled in the Masters of Religion and Science program at Biola University. He's the founder of the Traverse Life Center, which is an organization dedicated to helping people with poverty, addiction, housing needs, and family breakdown. And Kerry used to accept evolution as fact, and even after he became a Christian, he believed in what's called theistic evolution. But after examining the assumptions of evolution more closely, he's abandoned the theory in favor of an intelligent designer who created everything. Thanks for being on the show, Kerry. Appreciate you being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Great. I think we're going to have a great discussion, and the goal here tonight is to have a polite, civil, kind discussion about the different viewpoints and to provoke thought. I want to start by letting Sandy share a little bit with us about herself. Sandy, I wanted to ask you a couple questions here. You're an astronomy professor. When did you develop an interest in astronomy?
really probably from when I was a child. I, of course, grew up with the space race and have always been fascinated by space. And then that grew into a love of astronomy when I was in high school. I had the opportunity to, my high school, of all things, had a planetarium in it. And I had the opportunity to take an astronomy class my sophomore year of high school. And from that moment on, I really knew that that's all I wanted to do for the rest of my life.
Wow, that's great. Now, did you grow up in a Christian Catholic home, or do you have any, what's your religious background? How did you come to believe in Catholicism, and then how did you end up deciding not to be a part of the Catholic Church anymore?
Well, that's really a long, kind of a long answer. I hope you have time for it. I grew up in an extremely Catholic household,
mm-hmm.
and was taken to church every Sunday, had to go to CCD classes during the week, and was eventually put into a Catholic school. We moved just before I started eighth grade, and I had to go back into the Catholic school system. I went back to CCD classes. And very honestly, was probably always somewhat of a left-footed Catholic, and never as Catholic as my family was until about 15, 16 years ago. I went through an extremely tough time in my life and went back to Catholicism. Read the Bible, attended Bible study sometimes, and very honestly, in retrospect, think that I used it as a crutch to get me through that difficult time of my life. And as that time came closer to an end, I realized that it was slipping through my fingers, and I was kind of like, I vividly recall going to driving up to LA to this beautiful cathedral in Santa Monica, on Christmas Eve of 2000, and basically making this deal that if I heard this one song, it would be like my way of knowing that God knew that I was supposed to be there, and that would be my message that there was proof. And if I didn't hear the song, then I knew I wasn't supposed to be there, and I was done. And the song was not played. I drove, 40 miles an hour all the way up and all the way back in horrible dense fog. And the song was not played. And I knew then I was done. And not very long thereafter, I got deeper into my astronomy and physics, and the more I learned in astronomy and physics, the more the Catholicism and Christianity just slipped away from me, and I just knew in my heart and soul that's not where I belong.
So you definitely lean, would you say that you lean atheist even though you're agnostic? Would that be a fair description?
No.
No, okay.
I definitely lean agnostic. I will admit that I see a lot of strange things going on, and I have very, very Christian and Catholic friends, and they're very fervent believers, and I admit that I see strange things going on, but I wouldn't say that I'm an atheist.
Okay.
At all.
So how old were you at that point then when you decided that you were moving away from Catholicism when you had that event? How old were you then?
I was 37, 36 or 37, right around in there, maybe 38. It was like 12 years ago, right at 12 years ago. So I guess I would have been 38.
Okay. And were there other things moving you in that direction also? Was there maybe any individuals or anybody who were causing you to question the existence of God or the role of the church?
It was not individuals. It was really a deeper understanding of laws of the universe and physics and astronomy. And like I said, the more I learned and the further into that I got, the more I really started to question. And for me, the minute that you stop just taking everything on faith and you start to question, is the minute when you are no longer a believer, whether you're a theist or an atheist, and you become an agnostic because now you're questioning.
I see. Okay. Okay, I'm going to switch over here to Carrie. Carrie, let's get your perspective. Did you grow up in a religious home? And what were your views before you became a Christian?
Yeah, thanks. I would categorize it, my home as religiously confused early on in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember my mom kind of being into the horoscope thing for a while, and there was a little Buddha on the shelf. And then through, actually, it was a Sunday morning Christian television show. I was still young, and my mom was just kind of waking up off the couch, and through this experience with this guy on TV, she just made a statement, hey, I think I need to get my kids into Sunday school. And so the next week, she packed us up, and she found a church, and the only criteria for the church was that the service time matched the time for my father to pick us up, because he saw us on the weekends. So we went to that church, and she was there, and we were downstairs in the kids' church and really not wanting to be there because we didn't want the new experience, and we were the odd kids, and it's uncomfortable just being any place new. And she was upstairs, and the pastor was sharing his sermon about how it wasn't, you know, it was our sins that put Jesus on the cross, that it wasn't the nails that held him there. And she kept saying to herself, you know, I would never do that, and because I'm a good person, and I would never nail Jesus to the cross. And she was just justifying herself throughout the whole service. And then at the end, he kind of gave a response time. And when he did that, as she was justifying herself, she felt an invisible hammer handle in her hand. And she couldn't put it down. She could feel it. She couldn't see it. And at that moment, she just had this miraculous experience, and it absolutely transformed her life. From that point on, we were in church a lot. But even though I never really doubted the existence of God, I definitely doubted his goodness, and had to make my own choice later.
Now, you told me off the air when we were discussing coming on the show that even after you became a Christian, you still accepted evolution as a fact of science. And I'm just curious, did that affect your faith in the Bible at all, knowing that?
Yeah, when I was growing up, I was a science brat, and, you know, I wanted the microscope for Christmas. I wanted the telescope. I wanted the chemistry set that could set things on fire. I wanted all that stuff. And so I just dove into that. People didn't have to make me read science stuff. I wanted to read science stuff. And so the prevailing view at that time was evolution, and that's just what I kind of imbibed. As I did that, and I grew up and was kind of in the church, but still holding on to this evolution. It never connected in my head that these two really contradicted each other.
Carrie, we're going to pick up with this right after the break here. This is the Bob Siegel Show. I'm Kevin Conover filling in for Bob. We'll be right back.
Call Bob now at 888-344-1170. That's toll free, 888-344-1170. Bob may have strong opinions, but he also likes to hear what you have to say.
Some more beautiful.
This is the Bob Siegel Show. I'm Kevin Conover filling in for Bob. And we're talking right now with Sandy, who is an agnostic. She's a professor of astronomy up at Sadaboc College. And she currently is not a believer in Christianity. And we're also talking with Carrie, who is a pastor and also is in a master's program in science and religion, theology. And Carrie, we left off here with you telling us how evolution affected your belief in God and how you worked that out. I'm curious how it affected your belief in the Bible, and then at what point you decided evolution was not true.
Yeah, well, I graduated. I went to college at Western Michigan, and I was always fascinated with things that flew. So I went to flight school, and the experience at that school just kind of reinforced my belief in evolution to a large degree, and through the science classes and the physics and the chemistry and the things that I had studied. And then I had a moment in that part of my life where I just really decided that I needed to become a Christian, that how I was living my life just wasn't working out, and I made a decision to become a follower of Christ. But I still held on to the evolutionary view for a lot of years. It never clicked with me, and I don't know if it was because I had other bigger issues to deal with, but I held on to that evolutionary idea for a long time because it made sense to me. And again, the people that I revered were the scientists, and these are the people that were the arbiters of truth, and they were the unbiased ones that were you know, saying this is what we've discovered, and it had been a proven fact as far as I had been concerned. Until I had started working with youth in a church, a youth program, and I had a guy just come up to me, and I honestly don't remember his name. He started talking. We started talking about evolution and how he doesn't think that it's true and how he did it. And I'm a leader in the church, and I'm thinking to myself, man, you know, this guy, maybe he's a little slow, or, you know, maybe he's a little more unevolved. So I was not thinking that highly of him, but what he said to me challenged me. And he said, just look at it. Just look at the science of it. And it wasn't my religious persuasion that convinced me at all. Honestly, I understand now that there's some contradiction between the Bible and evolution, if you understand it.
Yeah.
However, at the time, it wasn't the Bible that convinced me. I began the process of really looking at the science of it, and it became convinced in that manner.
Oh, that's very interesting. Was there a specific area of science where that especially influenced you in that direction?
Yeah, it was kind of a progression, kind of like a snowball that, you know, continued to grow. But once I started reading kind of the rest of the story, I would read what the textbook would say, and then I would go deeper into Haeckel's embryos or the peppered moth or Stanley Miller's experiments, and I would look at kind of the rest of the story and what they really weren't telling me. And through that process, I felt burned almost by the science community because I held them so high in terms of their unbiasedness. But then as I looked at both sides of it and then what was presented to me all my life through the encyclopedias and through the textbooks, I felt like that they were holding out on me some information. And so that put a seed of doubt in my mind that maybe scientists aren't the perfectly unbiased people that we think. Maybe they do have, you know, some underlying agenda at times. And then there were other scientists, David Suzuki and his book on DNA, and Michael Behe and Dean Kenyon, and these other guys that I started to read who were really smart guys, all of them with PhDs, and who said, you know, maybe there's some reasons why this evolution thing isn't going to work. And as I started to look into the probabilities of amino acids and nucleotides coming together, you know, through chance processes, and the power, what really is the power of natural selection through random mutations. And
okay,
those kind of things started to really seal the deal for me.
Sure. Carrie, we actually have a caller who just called in. His name is Bob, and he has a question for Sandy, he said. Bob, are you on the line?
Hello?
Yeah, hi.
Is this the agnostic lady?
Yes, yes.
Yes, hi. No, I just had a more of a suggestion because of the story about driving all the way in the fog and wanting to hear a certain song. That was you telling that, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I guess I'm sure everybody's heard the saying, like, you don't make deals with God, like, show me this and then I'll believe. I'm just suggesting a better prayer would be, just show me. Just show me that you're not do this and that, and then I'll believe. But just show me you're real, and he will answer that prayer
Yeah, well, Bob,
he will, because he says he wishes none will perish.
Yeah, Bob, I appreciate you calling in, and thank you for doing that and posing that. I actually can follow that up, Sandy. What is the strongest proof for you that there is no God, in the sense that leads you to agnosticism rather than theism? I know you mentioned that story about wanting that song to play, but I'm sure there's more to it than that. What for you is the strongest evidence against God?
Oh, gosh. I suppose it would be that things like the horrible massacre at Newton, Connecticut, and the shooting up of a movie theater, and the bus that drove off a cliff in Oregon this afternoon, that those kinds of things exist, that there's poverty within, you know, a couple of miles radius of my home. If there was a God, wouldn't he cure all these problems?
Oh, well, that's a big question. I think that's probably one of the questions I hear more often than any other question that comes up. And before I say anything, I wanted to, Carrie, what is the strongest proof for you that there is a God? And maybe you can answer, respond to Sandy's question here. Because you are a believer and you've decided that there is a God despite the suffering in the world, what might you say to somebody like that?
Yeah, I think that the shootings and the tragedies that happen around the world are just as good of a proof for God, because in the evolutionary paradigm, or let's just say the pure naturalistic paradigm or the atheistic paradigm, then there isn't necessarily a moral law to judge right and wrong. And we know that laws only come from lawgivers. And the very fact that we can say there's bad points to the fact that there's a good. And then over above that, there's got to be some kind of way to judge between the good and the bad. And that's a moral law. And moral laws come from moral lawgivers.
Exactly. And the fact of the matter is, if we go back to the Bible and what the Bible says about that, basically most of the evil in the world ultimately comes from a person's rejection of God. And, oftentimes in public schools, we're not allowed to talk or pray. I recently was at a public school and I was talking about what I do for a living, and the teacher had to emphasize to me before I went into the school, please be careful. You're not allowed to talk about God. I just want you to know that up front. Don't say anything about God. And I think part of the reason when you have a culture that begins to reject the moral principles in the Bible, you're going to see more problems arise, would be part of the answer. And that goes all the way back to the Bible's explanation in the Garden of Eden, that Adam and Eve ultimately had to choose, do I trust God with what he wants for me, or do I reject what he wants and live life my way rather than his way? This is Kevin Conover sitting in for Bob Siegel on The Bob Siegel Show. We're talking with Carrie and Sandy, having a discussion about evolution, atheism, agnosticism, and all these big issues to start the, we're almost to the new year here. We will be right back. Thank you very much.
This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
This is the Bob Siegel Show. I'm Kevin Conover filling in for Bob. My website for apologetics and apologetics classes is educateforlife.org. If you want to join us here, on the radio, ask a question to myself, Sandy, or Carrie. The number is 888-344-1170. I want to continue along the same line of thought here that we were just discussing. You know, suffering, it's such a huge issue. And a lot of people, I do believe, decide, hey, because there is this suffering in the world, I've decided God does not exist. If he's all powerful, if he's all loving, and yet there's still this kind of suffering in the world, then why doesn't he do anything about it? Either he's not good or he's not all powerful, but he can't be both. But I would say I don't want to make light of suffering. I do believe there are a lot of answers to that question. There are a lot of potential answers that you could give to why suffering happens, whether it's people deciding to live life their own way, whether it's the fact that this life is temporary. I mean, even if people don't suffer in a tragedy like Newton, what happened in Connecticut, every one out of every one person dies. We're all going to die. And we could be angry with God about that. Why do we have to die? But ultimately, I believe the biblical answer to that is that there's a separation between a perfect God and a sinful people. And God has bridged that gap through Jesus Christ. And the only way to have that peace and that eternal joy is through that payment for our sins, which is obviously the biblical viewpoint there. But I heard a guy say, don't allow the unexplainable to keep you from the undeniable. And what he was saying was there are some things in life that are very difficult questions. And I think, hey, definitely suffering is one of those questions. As many answers as we can give, a lot of times it's not emotionally satisfying. But regardless of that fact, there are certain things that are undeniable. And that being the case, those are equally as important to consider when we make a decision about God, I think. Sandy, why do you think there is so much debate over Darwin's theory? I know that a lot of scientists do believe that evolution is Darwinian evolution is a fact. Do you have any opinion about why there continues to be all this debate over Darwin's theory?
You know, the only thing that I can think of is that there are a lot of Christians who believe that, you know, that the world is like 6 or 10,000 years old or whatever the Bible is that it says, and that they need to reject Darwinian theory in order to make the Bible fit with, you know, with their life and what they're seeing around them. Whereas if you embrace, you know, evolution and a scientific viewpoint, you see that the world that we live on is 4.45 billion years old, and, you know, the universe is 13.75 billion years old, and we have scientific experiments that can back that up, and that, you know, if you accept that the Earth is as old as it is, then somehow there must have been life prior to 6 or 10,000 years ago, because we had dinosaurs here 65 million years ago, and we have evidence for that. And somehow you have to be able to reconcile that with this biblical belief that there's that it's only 6 or 10,000 years old or whatever it is. So they just reject the Darwinian theory to kind of make all of this neatly fit together.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Can I get your opinion on that, Carrie? What do you think? Why is this continuing to be debated?
Yeah, I think it's continuing to be debated because truth has a tendency to be inconvenient at times. And, you know, I think the trend is that the more people are probing into the fine-tuning of the universe and the astounding machinery that is in the cell and the information content that was discovered in DNA a few decades ago, I think these things are pointing to a designer regardless of what the scripture says. And like I said, from my experience, the Bible had nothing to do with my deconversion from Darwinism. It had everything to do with these things that I was looking at. And when you walk along the beach and you see someone scribble something in the sand, you don't think the wind and the waves account for that. You think that information is always the product of a mind. And so with the DNA molecule and the evidence that's kind of being uncovered there, is moving a trend in another direction. as well as, you know, everybody wants to be the arbiter of truth, whether it be the church or the scientists. There's a lot at stake when it comes to the origins question.
Mm.
There's you know, questions of meaning and morality and destiny, not to mention grant dollars and standing in the public and all manner of things that are at stake when it comes to this question. So I think it's gonna persist as a question of our time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I wanted to point out also, I think there's a lot of people who are questioning it, who are beginning to question evolution as more and more science is beginning to demonstrate the incredible complexity of the universe, as well as of our own bodies, our DNA and everything else. There's a lot of people who you wouldn't who you wouldn't think would question are beginning to question it. One of those people is Thomas Nagel. He is an agnostic, and he recently wrote a book called Minding Cosmos, and the subtitle of the book is Why the Materialist Neo-Darwinian Conception of Nature is Almost Certainly False. And in the book, he argues that atheism cannot explain where the mind, consciousness, and free will come into play, and evolution cannot explain that. And he goes into a lot of depth. It's a great book. I highly recommend it if there's anybody who wants to do a little bit of research on that aspect of intelligent design. He's not an intelligent design proponent either, even though he kind of gives kudos to intelligent design. But he's an atheist agnostic, and he's questioning Darwinian theory and its ability. There's also a website called DescentFromDarwin.org, DescentFromDarwin.org. It now has over 2,000 PhD scientists who have signed on, saying that they are skeptical of Darwinian theory's ability to explain the complexity of life. And a very interesting website, and a lot of people from schools all over the world saying that, hey, we don't think that this theory is able to explain everything that we see around us. Let's see. You know, one of the things that comes up a lot is whether the Bible is scientifically accurate. And I've heard a lot of people say that the Bible is not scientifically accurate. But I wanted to just point out a couple things that are interesting about the Bible. In Isaiah 40:22, it actually says that the earth is round, not flat. It says, he who sits above the circle of the earth. And in Job 26:7, it says that the earth hangs on nothing. The Bible says, he stretches out the north over empty space. He hangs the earth on nothing. Now, interestingly enough, it wasn't until probably about Copernicus' time that we knew the earth was literally hanging on nothing in space, but yet the Bible was talking about that thousands of years ago, even at a time when the Hindus believed the earth to be supported on the back of four elephants. The Vedic priests believed it was on 12 solid pillars, but yet the Bible said it was hung on nothing. So I think the Bible is a different book from all the other religious books out there, and I do believe that even though it's not a science book, it is scientifically accurate. This is the Bob Siegel Show. I'm Kevin Conover, filling in for Bob while he's on vacation, and we will be right back.
Do your kids ask you questions about God and the Bible that you can't answer? Sign yourself or your child up for a class with lots of solid answers at educateforlife.org. Before someone else gives them the wrong answers. Are you tired of not knowing what to say when your friends and family ask you questions about God and the Bible? Get equipped by signing up for a class at educateforlife.org. When someone asks you, how do you know the Bible's true? Do you say something like, I just know it is? If you're tired of giving lame answers, sign up for a class at educateforlife.org. When someone says that God isn't real, wouldn't it be fun to prove that he is? Quickly, like a verbal ninja? By using science and logic. Sign up for a class at educateforlife.org with Christian apologetics teacher Kevin Conover, and you'll learn how to do that. Educateforlife.org.
This is the Bob Siegel Show. I'm Kevin Conover filling in for Bob. My website is educateforlife.org. If you want to join in our conversation, I encourage you to call in to ask Sandy a question or Carrie a question. The number is 888-344-1170. Sandy, I had another question for you. And if evolution were scientifically proven to be false, how would that affect your view of whether there is a God or not? Would that change your view at all, or would you still hold to a strong agnostic position?
I think you actually emailed me this question beforehand, and I think, as you will recall, I said that I'm not an expert on evolution.
Mm-hmm.
My training is in physics and astronomy and not in biology. And I doubt that I will live long enough to see evolution to be proven false.
Mm-hmm.
So this isn't something that I ever even worry about. I do have to ask, have either of you ever heard of the Urey Miller experiment that was conducted in the 1950s and 1960s, where a group of chemicals that were known to exist in the early universe were placed in flasks, and an experiment was set up, and various amino acids were introduced into this, and out of this they were able to get the basic constituents of life and various protein chains. I'm doing this somewhat off the top of my head, however, it's a very legitimate experiment. It's in several science and astronomy books. I believe his first name was Harold Urey. The last name is spelled U-R-E-Y. He won a Nobel Prize for this, and there's actually a building at UC San Diego named in his honor for this groundbreaking experiment that he conducted, which basically showed that the chemical constituents that could create life existed in the early universe, and that life was created out of those as a result of like lightning bolts and things interacting with these chemicals, and that is a basis for the belief in evolution.
Yeah,
those chemicals were carried to the inner solar system by comets, which arrived here from the Oort cloud and from elsewhere in the solar system in the near vicinity, and were carried here by comets and meteorites, and then, you know, those ices melted and seeded the inner solar system with those chemicals. So, like I said, this is a very legitimate experiment and is in most science, astronomy, and chemistry books.
Yeah, I think the problem I have with that is that was conducted in 1952, and like you said, it did produce amino acids. The problem, one of the largest problems I see, is that just having some of the building blocks doesn't make the building. And what I mean by that is, if you were building a house and you had all the parts to the house, but yet you didn't have any manual to put the house together, you still wouldn't get a house. And, you know, we know that the human body is basically composed of dirt, you know, in the sense that we are not, if you break us down, we decompose and we end up being dirt. But it takes a master architect in order to put the life together from those amino acids. Did you want to comment on that, Carrie?
Yeah, sure. I'm familiar with the experiment, and you know, a large part of my studies in this area is the origin of life world. And presently, the origin of life research community understands that when Miller did his work, it was novel at the time, but today it really has little experimental significance in explaining how life could arrive naturally here on Earth today. Because, and it's in all the textbooks that I have, but. And it does say that, you know, some of these life molecules were created, but it really overstates its results, because only two of the component bases, adenine and guanine, were produced in any significant extent, and that only two of the 20 amino acids were formed in any appreciable amount. On top of that, this is underreported, that other chemicals were also found there that were destructive to life processes. And so while it was a novel experiment, most origin of life researchers, especially Robert Shapiro, who's a professor of chemistry at New York University, in his book Origins, he kind of pointed out that in the origin of life scientific community today, while it was novel at the time, it doesn't really hold a lot of water today.
Yeah, so very interesting. I think one of the more significant things that's happening right now is with DNA, obviously, and the fact that information must come from an intelligent mind. Information doesn't just make itself. Information is inherently from an intelligent mind. And because our DNA is all information, the big question, this was the big question for Dean Kenyon, was where did the information come from? And ultimately, Dean Kenyon went from an evolutionary perspective to a creationist perspective because of the fact that he could not answer the question about where the information came from. He said it must have come from God, some sort of intelligent designer. Dean Kenyon, by the way, was one of the leading biochemical evolutionists in the world, professor at San Francisco State University, was an evolutionist and became a intelligent design proponent. So any other things you wanted to add to that, Sandy or Carrie?
Yeah, I want to harken back to the book that you mentioned, Nagel's book. I haven't read it. But the premise is intriguing to me, because when I look at life molecules, and Sandy alluded to the molecules being formed in the universe and then transported here, these chemicals, basically life's made up of carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, sulfur, and some phosphorus and some metals. And for me, it's hard for me to say, okay, these chemicals can somehow combine to produce a mind. And because chemistry does what chemistry does. There's no thinking involved as it relates to molecules. There's no mental molecule. And so how is it that chemicals can produce consciousness? Now, scientifically, what I see and what I observe is that minds come from minds, that information comes from intelligence. This is what I observe. This is what we see in life. And so if we're looking at rational thought and kind of empirical adequacy, I'm looking at minds coming from minds. I've never seen minds coming from chemicals. And so that would say a couple of things to me. One, the mind that I have, if it's just the result of random processes and random chemicals, then how could I even trust my thoughts to be non-random? How could I trust my senses to inform me about reality? And second, if there is a mind out there that is greater than me, that is responsible for my mind, then I can trust my thoughts as rational. And I can actually do rational, empirical research, trusting that this mind out there made, one, nature to be somewhat stable and not capricious so that we could discern it and we could learn about it. And two, I can trust my mind and my senses to inform us about reality. And these are some of the philosophical assumptions that science rests on that have to be taken in some sense of faith.
This is the Bob Siegel Show. I'm Kevin Conover, filling in for Bob. Our guests are Sandy Hewlett and Carrie Waldy. And we've been dealing with the questions of evolution, atheism, agnosticism, the existence of God. And I hope you can join us. We have one more segment here before we close out. And the phone number is 888-344-1170.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out Bob's weekly column for Washington Times Communities. Bob is also a regular contributor for San Diego Rostra and San Diego Newsroom. And don't forget his website, www.bobsiegel.net, S-I-E-G-E-L, bobsiegel.net. Here, you can download past radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and get information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net. We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
This This is the Bob Siegel Show. I'm Kevin Conover filling in for Bob. My website's educateforlife.org. You can sign up for apologetic classes online there. If you want to join us tonight, the phone number is 888-344-1170. My guests again are Sandy Hewlett and Carrie Waldy. And thank you very much, both of you, for being on the show here tonight. Anthony Flew, an atheist professor at Oxford, not too long ago, left atheism after 50 years. And I wanted to ask you, Sandy, would there ever come a point at which you would reconsider theism? And what would it take for that to happen?
An act of God.
An act of God. Okay. I know who plenty of people who have come to the Lord through that. So maybe that'll happen. What kind of acts specifically would need to happen?
I think this is like that Supreme Court justice who says he can't divine what pornography is, but he knows it when he sees it.
Oh.
about where I'm at. I'll know it when I see it. It will strike me at the core of my existence, and I will know that that's the direction that I am supposed to go. And until that happens, I'm staying where I'm at.
Gotcha. What would you say to somebody, Carrie, who's considering it and who's in the position of Sandy? What would you say to somebody in that kind of a position?
Well, first I would say Sandy's in a great position to encounter God because she has a keen understanding of math and of physics and of the universe. And the heavens declare his glory. And what I would ask Sandy to do is to look into the fine-tuning of the weak and strong nuclear forces and to the balance between the expansion the expansion of the universe and these other things that she has access to that even most people, most lay people, do not. And they're finding, even for instance, the idea of the Big Bang, that the universe is not finite. The ancients thought the universe was an infinite thing or that it had some kind of cycle to it. But now, most scientists are saying, well, it's not infinite, it's finite, and that it must have been nothing at one time and then it became something. And we know that nothing comes from nothing. Science shows us that. Science is a search for causes. And so we know that we live in a cause and effect universe, and the effect is the universe. It must have had a cause. And we know that nothing causes anything. So looking into the depths of that, I think she has the ability to do that, and even in a greater way. And if she does have this experience with God and has this relationship reconnection, because I believe that God created her for that relationship, and I think that she will be able to have a deeper relationship with God because of her understanding of the sciences. And I think it will be the equivalent of touring the Sistine Chapel with Michelangelo there.
That's great. That's a great description. I tell people, it would be harder for me to deny the existence of God than it is for me to believe in the existence of God and the Bible as his word. After studying all the things that I've studied, it just, to me, seems overwhelming, the evidence for God. And, Stanford University just appointed its first atheist chaplain, which is kind of interesting. Kind of a weird situation there, an atheist chaplain. His name is John Figdor, I believe. And he said, "Atheist, agnostic, and humanist students suffer the same problems as religious students, deaths or illnesses in the family, questions about the meaning of life, etc., and would like a sympathetic non-theist to talk to." And I thought that was interesting, and I'm sure that might help a little bit, but Dr. Will Provine, who was the atheist history of biology professor at Cornell University, he said about his own atheism, he said, "Atheism means there is no God, no afterlife, no meaning to life, no free will, no ultimate foundation for ethics." And I think this issue of evolution and atheism is such a huge issue. In many of the conversations I've had, many people don't know a lot of the answers that are out there. the consequences of atheism and evolution are gigantic. You know, even if it was true, which there's overwhelming evidence that it's not true, I wouldn't even want it to be true. I wouldn't want it to be true. If I were a chaplain, I'd be able to encourage people with the knowledge that they'll get to spend eternity with their loved ones and that God loves them and will see them through. But the crazy thing about that position for that atheist chaplain is the hope he has to offer is so incredibly limited. And I'm not at all for living in a false reality. I'm all about the truth. But I think what the significance here is that this is so important that in this new year, 2013, if there's anybody out there who's put off looking into the evidence for the existence of God, I would encourage you, take the time to look into it. There are plenty of answers to the questions that are out there. And ultimately, the hope of eternity, the hope of being saved and spending eternity in a in an incredible place in heaven versus the depressing consequence of evolution and atheism, which is I cease to exist. There's nothing. My loved ones are gone. Nothing happens. It's all gone. Gosh, I just think if it's true, why not jump wholeheartedly into that, the arms of a loving God? And despite the suffering out there, I think he grieves over the suffering. So anyway, I just want to encourage everybody out there that you know, God loves you. He's real. And take the time to get to know him. Any last words, Sandy or Carrie, before we get off the air here?
Yeah, I think that there's enough evidence out there. God has given us enough evidence in the world to make believing in him rational.
Mm-hmm.
But he's left just enough out to keep some mystery and to keep us from believing just on pure logic alone. But every system of thought out there has faith commitments. And I think Christianity answers the big questions of life in the most coherent way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what God wired us for.
Anything else, Sandy?
Nope.
Well, and I actually want to add one more last thing here. We got a couple minutes here. And that is that, you know, Sandy, you started off by saying, I'm an agnostic. I'm looking for the evidence and so forth. The position I'm in, too, is that I cannot definitively say God is real because I don't know all there is to know. But what I can say is that by far, the existence of God and the worldview put forth in the Bible is the most plausible that makes sense of all the pieces. Well, this is an interesting way to end the show. But anyway, Sandy, thank you very much for being on the show. Carrie, thank you very much for being on the show. And I think we'll wrap it up there. This is the Bob Siegel Show. I'm Kevin Conover filling in for Bob. My website is educateforlife.org. My phone number, the phone number here, well, you won't need it till next week, but Bob will be back next week to continue the conversations into the new year. I hope everybody has had a fantastic 2012, and I look forward to co-hosting in the future with Bob. I'm going to be on once a month, January, February, March, April. My next class starts January 13th. It's a class on creation versus evolution. And we talk about all the evidences, a lot of the stuff we covered here tonight, but in much more detail, talking about things. Is it possible for something to come from nothing? Is it possible for life to come from nothing? And all the other issues as far as that's concerned. So thank you very much for joining us tonight. I hope you enjoyed the show. Carrie, thank you for being on the show. Sandy, take care and have a fantastic new year.
The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.